Okay, let's get everybody in here as we have a very full hour ahead of us. Well, good evening, everybody. I think I said a good morning to a few people. It's just a habit. It was kind of dark this morning, so I'm just going to quickly open up before we invite Dr. Heinz Laclama. I've been working on that all day. Up to speak, as it'll be a full hour of data download for us. If you've ever watched any of the Vax movies, you'll walk away with really how amazing God's grace and mercy is that most people have any health at all. Listen, our news media feeds us a lot of disinformation, doesn't it? It's difficult to know what to believe or even know where the right data exists to make informed decisions. Romans 14:5 says, one person regards one day above another, another regards every day alike. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind. The point is this, each Christian must follow the dictates of their own conscience in matters not specifically commanded or prohibited in Scripture. We cannot allow the COVID shot, or whatever you might want to call it, to divide us. Like good Bereans, we should get as informed as we can in today's world, and Dr. Heinz has done a wonderful job in doing just that. So with that, let's welcome up Dr. Heinz.
Well, good evening. Thank you for coming out and having an interest in this topic. I know you read it in your newspapers all the time, and what I'm going to talk about is probably mostly you don't see in your mainstream media news. But before I start on this, let me just say what I've got to say tonight is not necessarily a position of this church. I don't speak on behalf of the church. This is my opinion. And as a scientist, I say you should think very carefully about what I say. Just don't take it as gospel. You know, you should be a skeptic and test it. So test everything I say. This is contrary to what you see out there. When some information comes out behind the scenes, especially if it gets on YouTube or Twitter, it's very often taken down. So, but anyway, I want to start this off just with a few verses that you see here. Acts 19:32. Now some cried out one thing, some another, for the assembly was in confusion, and most of them did not know why they had come together. And I think we see this in COVID. There's a lot of confusion about what it is and what the right treatment is for that. Acts 17:11. Encourage us to be a good Berean. Let me just read that verse. Now these Jews were more noble than those in Thessalonica, which is very close to Berea. They received the word with all eagerness, examining the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. In other words, you need to be a good Berean and test everything I say. And as a scientist, I take the next verse very seriously. That is 1 Thessalonians 5:21. But test everything, hold fast to that which is good. Scientists are trained to be skeptics. You know, we are to ask questions to get to the truth. Today, if you ask questions, the wrong question, you just get censored. That's not how science works. Okay, and also in this environment, we should not live in fear, with the spirit of fear. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. And we should remember that. So let me give you a highlight. These are the main topics I'm going to talk about. First of all, about the coronavirus, where it started, and the early months. And then I'm going to talk about test cases, deaths from COVID, and also masks and lockdowns are very important topics that you are concerned about, too, I'm sure. And then we're going to introduce you to what I call the medical players, and that is the medical organizations that we have here in the U.S. that you should be aware of. And then also introduce you by name to the scientists and doctors that I follow to get to the truth of what COVID vaccines and early treatment is all about. And then I'll talk about vaccine treatment first, what that's all about, and then also look at the dangers of it, the vaccine deaths and injuries. Some of those numbers I'm sure you have not seen. And then I'll go into early treatments. You know, you've heard the words hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Those are early treatments, and those are very important, as you'll see. I've got a lot here from Dr. Peter McCullough, who I'll introduce as they go along. But he is a real proponent of early treatments, and he's got a lot to say about vaccines as well. He's one of the most published doctors in the world, really, on these topics. He has dedicated his career for the last year and a half just to studying COVID. And so he's one of the doctors that I follow. So we'll see what some of these scientists and doctors have to say. And then we'll get into the vaccine mandates, which is a real big issue for a lot of people, obviously. And then a little bit about the protests that are going on. And then reluctantly talking about the dark side. There really is a dark side to some of this, too, that we need to be aware of. And then summarize and respond. Here's some on the origins of the virus called SARS-2. And I leave it a question mark. Many people consider it is really a bioweapon from Wuhan labs. And obviously some of the things we've learned over the last few weeks lean in that direction. But I'm not going to go into that much at all. So the first case was recognized in China, Wuhan. January 2020, first case in the U.S. March, we started our first lockdown, 2 weeks. And the purpose of that 2 weeks was to make sure their hospital beds weren't overloaded. So it was supposed to be 2 weeks, and then we're free to go again. Well, you know how that worked out. So then Dr. Zelenko. How many of you have heard of Dr. Zelenko? He's the one that came out with the name of hydroxychloroquine as a solution all the way back in March of 2020. And Trump mentioned him as well on TV, which was probably a mistake because you know where that went. But anyway, he is the one that introduced that, and he's been very, very successful with it. And I'll go into that. And then, of course, the next month, April, May, Trump introduced this warp speed vaccine project, and that has resulted in the vaccines that we have, or so-called vaccines today. So we've seen cases and deaths climb worldwide. The first vaccine, Pfizer vaccine, was approved for emergency use only in the December of last year. So it's been 10 months now. And then January 2021, we had a change in presidents. So Mr. Fauci, I call him King Fauci, is in charge. Some people want to compare the coronavirus pandemic to the Spanish flu. You see the Spanish flu up in the upper right, 40 to 50 million died from that flu. And some say we're going to lose that many here as well, some very high numbers. And we are now, I had 280 when I first put this together. That was pretty well at the beginning. Now we're up about worldwide, these are worldwide numbers. We're close to 5 million. So that is about a tenth, 10% of the Spanish flu, but at that time, we had about a quarter of the population, so it's 1/40 of the Spanish flu, really, when you consider it that way. There's a big difference between the two. 1918, pneumonia, this influenza. The dark blue is the number of deaths, the death rate per 100,000 from the Spanish flu. And you'll see that for the very young, even less than 1 year, there are a lot of deaths. And then there are also a lot of deaths in those over 85, but in between, it's up and down. With the coronavirus, what we know is that the number of deaths in under 50 is very, very low. And once you get over 50, over 85, you'll see by the light blue, that's where most of the deaths are occurring. There's a number of charts put out on the World Data website, and they tracked the number of cases in all the countries in the world. And I've just picked about 10 of them here because these I'm going to use for comparison purposes. You'll see that the number of cases in the red, they're the top or the middle where you see United Kingdom, they have the highest number of cases. Well, they have the number of highest number of cases now. And the U.S. is right up there, number two. And then in general, Europe, Israel. And then at the very bottom, you have India, Africa, and Taiwan. Not as many cases. And this is very significant because this next one shows the number of confirmed deaths per million people. And guess who's on the top there? U.S. We have the most number of deaths from this virus. And you might say, how can that be? We're the most advanced nation in the world. We've got great doctors and scientists. How can that be? Well, it turns out, I'm sure you've seen some stories about in some states where they moved the sick, the recovering from COVID into nursing homes. And that, of course, caused a huge number of infections. So the U.S. had a great number of deaths because of that. But the other thing is the use of early treatment was not allowed. In other words, if you get COVID, you got to wait till you're really sick, and then you go to the hospital. And then they give you, later on, they give you things like the only drug that is approved with that time was remdesivir. You may have heard of that. And that's not the best drug to put people on, but that's the one that Fauci wanted to do. It is not approved. It's only approved in the U.S. by the FDA. It's not approved by WHO even. It's not approved in any other country in the world, just here. And that's a problem. And, of course, as you know, in the early days when Zelenko came up with the early treatment, after his success in the first month, the governor of New York said, no, you can't use that. That hasn't been approved by the FDA, so you can't use it. So all the people using hydroxychloroquine as solutions were essentially shut down, and you had to do it in the underground. And that's a big problem. Because if you look at the bottom of the right of the chart here, you'll see India and Africa and Asia who actually used hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin for treatment, and they had many fewer deaths. I'll give you some more examples later on. So let's talk about masks for a minute. And you know, people are free to use masks, of course. I don't have a problem with that. But the question is, do they work? And if you look at these, you know, these are the four kinds of masks that are in common use here. There are surgical masks, and there are the N95, which is the best for keeping out almost everything. But your cloth mask doesn't keep out very much. Why is that? Well, look at the sizes here. You'll see in the middle there, towards the left, towards my left here, your right, you'll see viruses. Well, they are anywhere from 10 to 100 micron, nanomicrons in size. So And the cloth there, you'll see the, so even the surgical mask, but certainly the cloth mask, it will stop none of that. It's way over to the right. You know, that's all it'll stop dust and human hair can't get through it. But one of my mathematical friends has told me that the way to think about that, it's like trying to use a chain link fence to stop a mosquito. So, you know, wearing those, this doesn't do it. So, do masks work? Well, here's a good example. You know, using masks, this chart looks from March 2020 to March 2021. And so you'll see that the mask usage, as measured on the right side from 0 to 100%, goes all the way up to 80%. You know, after about July of 2020, pretty constant, 80% of the people used masks. But if you look at the number of tests that test positive, you know, over that period of time, it started very low, 50,000, and up to 250,000. Over that same period of time, there wasn't any change in the use of masks. So obviously masks don't make a difference, is what I would conclude. And there's a lot of evidence in that regard. Here's another case in the UK where the new cases in black and the red is the new deaths come up. Before July or so, there was no requirement for masks. And then all of a sudden, July 25th, they said, you got to use a mask. Well, what happened? The case still went up and the deaths stayed about the same. So again, that doesn't really help you much. So that's masks. Then the other big thing in this pandemic is the fact what we use to test for the COVID virus is the PCR test. And PCR test is a, it's called the polymerase chain reaction test. The person that invented that, Dr. Kerry Mullis, here's what he had to say. Anyone can test positive for practically anything with a PCR test. If you run it long enough with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody. It doesn't tell you that you're sick. And so what they've been doing before, probably before October, November last year, they would run up to 40 cycles. In other words, you run one cycle, see if you get anything, and then you double the strength of that test. If you don't get any, you go all the way up to 40 cycles. And so you're almost going to find something all the time. And when you get to 40 cycles, 90% of the tests are false positive. So it doesn't tell you anything. And so before, and then in January, when there was a new administration, obviously, suddenly they said, no, we should lower that cycle to 28. It was more reasonable. And notice that these test cases, the cases that came down as well. So this is not a useful test. And the FDA has recognized, CDC has recognized that now, and they plan to change that, but not till January. So in the meantime, if you test positive, you really don't know whether you got it or not. That you need to be concerned about. So let me just go over make sure everybody knows who the medical organizations are. WHO, World Health Organization, and that oversees all countries. FDA, Food and Drug Administration, they check food and drugs for safety, make sure that they're safe to use. And then CDC is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and they are the ones that set the rules for using the drugs and the vaccines. And then NIH, you may have heard of, that's the National Institute of Health, that is run by, there's a sub-organization, let me just say, underneath that, NIAID, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and that is where Fauci comes in. He's the head of that. And it's Francis Collins is the head of NIH, And he's a well-known, he's actually an evangelical believer, but he is stepping down from that because clearly there is a problem in those two organizations. And then we have the American Medical Association, which oversees all the doctors, provides, gives licenses to doctors so they can use, so they can practice. And then you also have another organization, AAPS, stands for the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And that's where most of the practicing doctors are members of that. They're the ones that see patients. And so this is where people like Dr. Peter McCullough fit in, and others, and Dr. Zelenko as well. And then there's an organization that was formed back in July of last year called the America's Frontline Doctors, AFLDS. And they are people that promote the use of early treatment, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. And then worldwide, we have another organization, which you probably, most people wouldn't hear about, the World Economic Forum, the International Organization for Public-Private Cooperation, headed up by Klaus Schwab. I'll mention his name later on. And then Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they are philanthropists, and they give money to different organizations. And where they gave money is very enlightening to what we see today. Okay, here are the medical scientists that I follow. And you can see, you probably haven't heard of most of these. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about them, but just the top three are Michael Yeadon, former vice president of Pfizer Pharmaceuticals. And he is very critical of the vaccines in use. And he's from Pfizer. But he can see the danger in these. Dr. Robert Malone, he's the inventor of the mRNA technology platform. He's not responsible for the vaccine itself, but he's responsible for the design of that platform. And that's where Pfizer and Moderna are based on. And Dr. Geert van den Bosch, a PhD in virology, and he's from Belgium. Dr. Luc Montagé, another virologist, he's the recipient of a Nobel Prize in Medicine, and he's from France. And so on. Many of these, you can see, they are epidemiologists, which deal with pandemics, diseases, and how to control them. And then virologists, which deal with the virus itself. And so I won't go through all of these. But these are very important people at dealing with how to treat and control this virus. And you'll see later on that almost all of these say, we've gone too far. We need to stop this vaccine. And I should state here that I realize that some people here have taken the vaccine already, and some people have not, and there are people here who have not, but they've caught COVID and have recovered, so they have what we would call natural immunity. So I'm not trying to minimize the people that have already taken it. Some of them have very good reason for doing that, and some have, because of the mandates around, they are to keep their job. Some of them have to do that, and as well. I have some. We have some. Children and grandchildren who have taken the vaccine to keep their job. We would wish that they didn't have to, but and they didn't want to, but they did. And we have another grandchild who just is a new nurse, 4-year degree nurse. She got a job at a hospital in Indiana, and a month later she was told that you have to take the vaccine if you want to work here. Well, she wasn't going to take it. And she found a job at another hospital which didn't require it. And so there are possibilities, but it's not easy, as we know. The last person on this list here, you may have heard about Sweden. They did not have a lockdown. They had a very different approach, and they've been very successful in general dealing with this. And then here's the doctors, which I'm going to talk more about. Dr. Zelenko is very instrumental because he is the one of the first ones that discovered that hydroxychloroquine with zinc and vitamin C and vitamin D is a good solution for early treatment. In other words, as soon as you discover you've got your coughing and you probably have COVID, then you should start using hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin is what Zelenko would say. And Peter McCullough is in the same boat. He is more prominent because he's well published and he's a professor and a practicing doctor. Dr. Pierre Corey, he came in with the treatment with ivermectin and he had great success with that. Dr. Joseph Marcola has been around for a lot. He's been publishing a newsletter for 25 years. And I really appreciate his articles that he puts out daily. However, he's been so successful that he has been censored off of some platforms. And almost all of these doctors, even Dr. Malone, who is the inventor of the mRNA technology platform, he's been censored off of YouTube because he said something against the accepted narrative. And almost all these doctors and scientists I speak about have been censored in some form. So Zelenko, McCullough, Corey, Dr. Simone Gold is the founder of the online the America's Frontline Doctors. Rand Paul, who is of course a senator from Kentucky, and he's the one that really challenges Fauci and his facts, and he's done a very good job of that. And we're thankful for that. And he himself has said COVID and said, I'm not taking the vaccine because I've got natural immunity. And these other doctors, they're all well-regarded doctors. Okay, then looking at COVID, their survival rates. And if you look at these numbers for like 0 to 4, 5 to 9 years old, you know, their survival rate is like 99.999%. There is almost no deaths at all from COVID on these young children. In fact, even going up to age 50, you know, you'll see 99.832, an average of 99.879. So even if you're 50 and less and you have no comorbidities, you're in good health, you don't have to worry about it. You know, most people will recover. In my age group, of course, the survival rate is a little lower, but we're not. My wife and I both have had COVID, and so have good immunity. So we're not worried about that. So it's important to realize the different survival rates of these age groups, which means we should never vaccinate children, young children. That's a big mistake. And all these doctors will agree, but will Fauci agree? So here, let's get into a little bit about the vaccine treatments. So the Pfizer one was the first vaccine. It's really gene therapy. It's approved for experimental use December 2020. But its clinical trial is set to run to 2023. But the problem is they haven't run that whole thing yet. And they've already introduced another version, you know, Comirnaty. So Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, which is a one shot, does not use mRNA. And then the supposedly the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine was approved for full use under the new name of Comirnaty, but you can't get it here. It's approved, and unfortunately, that is used to issue many of these vaccine mandates, and that's just wrong. Pfizer booster shot approved for ages 65 and above in September 21. That's just last month. And other approvals for various age groups are pending. And there is one that is up before the FDA, I think this Tuesday. and that is for the ages 5 to 11. And there's, in fact, Pastor Carey sent someone around, I think, to the church members to say, you need to submit your response to that and say, no, these kids don't need a vaccine. If they get COVID, they'll recover just fine. So before the Pfizer vaccine was approved for emergency use, the FDA put out some statements that here are the kinds of things that you should be aware of. You know, things like you can have a stroke from this vaccine. You can have convulsions. You can have myocarditis, which is the heart muscle. You know, these are serious kinds of injuries you can get. You can have autoimmune disease. Let me see, what's the other big one? Blood clots. You know, that's a big one too. And, oh, by the way, did I mention death? Another, you know, thing to be aware of, because there are deaths from these vaccines, which you'll see. So the experimental, some facts about the experimental COVID vaccines. They at the beginning, they had efficacy that they were effective up to 90%, but these efficacy rates reduced over time. And they are now, I think, for Pfizer, they are under 40%. And that's where there's talk of a booster. But as you'll see, that has problems too. So they do reduce, the vaccines do reduce the symptoms of COVID-19, but they don't stop reinfection or transmission. So that's not a vaccine in my world. And they use, you know, this new mRNA technology. This is the first time any vaccine that is in use has used this mRNA technology. First time. And there's no long-term testing on humans. I mean, most vaccines aren't introduced for up to 8 to 10 years, you know, after full testing and after testing on animals. This has not been tested on, those two tests have not happened. The clinical trials are incomplete, even for the emergency use. This is to go to 2023, and that is not finished. There are a very significant number of deaths and injuries, and the vaccine manufacturers are not liable for any death or any injury, if you can imagine. And then they would want to mandate this. You know, that's what most people have a problem with. Now, if you've been infected with COVID, you probably have good natural immunity. And we believe we do, and those that have been affected and recovered do have good natural immunity. But we should also recognize that there are effective and safe therapeutics like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So the FDA approval of the Pfizer COVID vaccine in August 23 of this year, they issued two letters, one to extend the use of the Pfizer vaccine that is now in use for another year, and then another one called Comirnaty, which is yet unknown. It's not available yet and may not be available for another 3 or 4 years, depending on the number of tests they have to run on that. So, and also with that, as far as we know, there's no control group to check the efficacy of that vaccine, so it's not a vaccine. Dr. Peter McCullough and 56 other doctors recently, just October 19th, less than a week ago, they released a study warning against COVID-19 vaccines, demanding an immediate end to vaccines. That's how strongly they feel about that. That's Dr. McCullough and other doctors. LifeSite News, they have a lot of good articles which cover vaccines and drugs and other things. Here's what they have to say about the full approval. The Pfizer clinical trials don't end till May 2023, as I've seen on the last slide, or the previous slide. COVID jab mandates violate fundamental human rights. There's a history of medical disasters to consider. There's been no external review of the Pfizer jab. All we have is 6 months of incomplete data. No control groups in this global experiment. The immunity the jabs may have provided appears to be waning. Pfizer never publicized these troubling results from earlier animal trials. With a previous attempt at using an mRNA vaccine, they ran some animal trials, I believe it was about 10 years ago, they were very unsuccessful. But animal trials have not been run on this one yet. There's a wave of vaccine mandates issued in response to the FDA announcement, make it full approval, although it's not available as a full approval vaccine. Another organization which really speaks for the children's health, and this is actually run by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a son of the former senator and presidential Kennedy, and he is very adamant that, you know, we shouldn't be using all these vaccines. They cause real havoc with children, and then particularly this one, which is an unknown. You know, the organization, I believe, has issued a number of different lawsuits to try to stop the use of these vaccines, particularly for children. Okay, so what about the number of deaths and injuries? Here's one from September 10th, about 6-7 weeks ago. You see, then already there's been 4,925 deaths, 60,000 hospitalizations, urgent care, 80,000. Bell's palsy, 8,000. Miscarriages, you know, if you read the CDC site, they'll say these vaccines are safe for pregnant women. They are not. There's been some tests that have run. Women that got the vaccine while they were pregnant, particularly in the first semester, they almost always have a miscarriage. And one study was 82% miscarriage. So this is 1,862 miscarriages, 6,600 heart attacks, myocarditis and pericarditis, that's the heart muscles, you know, they're damaged, and those cannot be repaired. So if young people get these vaccines, you know, and they're in their youth, you know, they're going to university. We have one grandson who just started university, and to do that, he had to take the shot. So it gave him a real heart rash, which just wouldn't go away. And then finally he went to the doctor, and so he's okay now. But again, it shouldn't, kids like that, especially athletic kids, they shouldn't need it. You know, as you see, the death rate is very, very low for that. So, and blood clots is a big thing too, especially with the Johnson & Johnson. So these are large numbers here. And here's another report later on, October 8th. I've listed them, you know, in all of the different ranges. These are reported in the, what they call the VAERS COVID vaccine database. VAERS stands for Vaccine Adverse Event Reports. Okay, you can look it up. I've got the website there, openvirus.com, and you can get all these numbers there. They're updated weekly. These are huge numbers, you know, and I'm not going to go through all of them. But by the way, I know you can't copy all these numbers down. I will make all these slides available to anybody that wants them after, if you have an interest. So here's the real shocker. So, you know, these are just numbers, but we have been doing, you know, the vaccines for 30 years, and the VAERS database tracks those for the last 30 years. The average number of deaths is about between 20 and 40, you know, it varies year by year. And then you'll see here, 2020, of course, there's none because the vaccine just came out December and all this year. Now we're up to over 16,000 deaths. This is a huge jump, you know, from 20 to 40, let's say 30 average, up to 16,000. I think it's almost 17,000 now. How can they let that go? You know, they got to do something about that, you would think. And if you look at the deaths, you know, when they were given the vaccine, like on day zero, of that list above, in the previous slide, more than 2,000 died on the, you know, as soon as they got it, day one, day zero. And that day one, another 1,000 died. And then so on, it goes down. And so after a month, you know, you're almost back down to where it's normal numbers. So it takes a month. And, you know, that's incredible. So that was the U.S. Here's the European, and it's even worse. You know, they've had 27,247 dead, you know, from these vaccines. And there's four vaccines, the same three that we have in the U.S. here, plus AstraZeneca. So up to October the 9th, total of 2,563,000, you know, injuries of different kinds. These are huge numbers, and who's going to support them? You know, there's no insurance to cover that. If you have an injury from this, you're on your own. You know, the vaccine companies do not cover you. This is an earlier one, and I'm just showing the ones from VAERS, which is the U.S., the yellow card, which is from the U.K., and the Vigi Access, which is worldwide, and then the European, number one there, you do, Vigilance. And back then, a few months ago, it was 40,000 deaths from all these vaccines worldwide. Huge numbers. And then here is another useful comparison. You know, I said the number of deaths and injuries from previous vaccines over the last 30 years, they weren't that large. But in comparison now, you know, we're starting to vaccinate at least 16 and above, in some places 12 to 19. Here's it for comparison, you know, 30 deaths compared to 4 from other vaccines. And then blood clots from 3 to 84. You know, these are huge injuries that people need to be aware of. So now back to, and this is the World Health Organization, which is on the top of this pyramid there. They've started to redefine some terms to suit their story. And here's one. Back in June of 2020, what do they mean by herd immunity? It says, herd immunity is the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or immunity developed through previous infection. Okay, that's good. But now, November, they changed the story. Herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. In other words, if a certain percentage of population is vaccinated, then you have herd immunity. They don't count natural immunity. That's a very important change that should not be there. And here's a change in the definition of vaccination. Before 2015, injection of a killed or weakened infectious organism, that's what vaccines we're used to. You know, it's a weakened organism, and which is injected in order to prevent the disease. Prevent. Five, six years, is vaccination is defined as the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce immunity to a specific disease. Okay. And then later, September of this year, it's the act of introducing a vaccine into the body to produce protection from a specific disease, and not immunity. Because, you know, we know now that the vaccines, don't protect you from getting reinfected, because it's the strength of the immunity caused, given by the vaccine, has been reduced over time. So again, they're redefining terms that's going to confuse us. And here's a little bit more on that, defining the vaccine. Who's vaccinated today? If you've had, some would say, if you have had two shots of one of the mRNA, you're vaccinated. If you had one shot, Johnson & Johnson, you're vaccinated. But no, there's another term. If you have one or two shots plus 2 weeks of more, then you are fully vaccinated. In other words, the vaccine hasn't taken effect fully until 2 weeks later after your last shot. What does that mean? That means if there's a death in those 2 weeks, it's counted as a COVID death, not as a vaccine death. So the numbers that we're going to be seeing is, you don't know how to treat them. So they're playing games. So these vaccinations, of course, they result, when we now know, limited immunity, not total immunity, very limited. And the strength of the immunity is going down over time. Who's unvaccinated? Well, if you've not had a shot, no COVID infection, unvaccinated. If you had one or two shots plus less than 2 weeks, you're still unvaccinated. But if you have no shots and recovered from COVID infection, you have natural immunity, which is better than just the vaccine immunity because it lasts longer. But you're still unvaccinated. I'm unvaccinated, but I've recovered from infection and have resulted in natural immunity. And the problem is, when you hear those words, you'll see the president say, this is a pandemic of the unvaxxed. Well, which unvaxxed? The ones that have been recovered, or the ones that just haven't gotten the vaccine? I followed the countries Israel and the UK, because they are the most vaccinated countries in the world. There's a few more that are more, but these are decent-sized countries that are, 80% or more vaccinated. But now, as you see, the countries that are well vaccinated, they're starting to get more infections among the vaccinated, because the vaccinated are getting reinfected more than of the unvaccinated. And that's what this is the one statistics which shows that. And fortunately, Israel and the UK take much better records of this than we do here. Ours is very confusing. And here's, just the confirmed cases. And you can see here the number of cases among the unvaccinated is about 20% of those that are fully vaccinated in the second column here. And I won't go through all the age groups there. Okay, so that's vaccination. Now, let me talk a little bit about early treatments. And as you know, the hydroxychloroquine is the first one that's been recommended by Dr. Zelenko. And actually, there's another doctor in France who came up with it at the same time. And he's also had the same problem that Zelenko has by getting censored. But there are countries which have used hydroxychloroquine from early on. And so you can't read all the names of the countries here, but like at the far right, under green, you see Costa Rica. Okay, so the number of case fatality rate is much, much lower for those that have full hydroxychloroquine use as opposed to no hydroxychloroquine use in the red. These are countries in the red there that just have not been allowed to use hydroxychloroquine. And then there's some in between, which are countries that In some cases, some doctors are allowed to do it and some not. So you can see there's a message there. If you're allowed to use hydroxychloroquine, you have many fewer deaths. Yeah. Here's another way to look at it. This is adjusted deaths per million. And these are some of the countries that have used hydroxychloroquine. You see at the bottom, Greece, Indonesia, Ukraine, Morocco, India, some. All of those are much, much lower death rates per million than those that have not. You'll see the U.S. and the U.K. are, you know, way up here. Sweden is sort of in the half there. But they have much higher death rates than the ones that use hydroxychloroquine. That's a pretty simple test. Here's one where this is in India, okay, where initially they didn't use ivermectin, but then in October 2020, they started using ivermectin, and then the first bump there, you'll see that the number of deaths go down. And then all of a sudden, they started to vaccinate in March, April of 2021, and the death rate starts to go back up again. So that's very strange. But this is the, let's see, yeah. Okay, let me just introduce Dr. Pierre Corey. He's the guy that introduced, really got ivermectin in use for early treatment. And ivermectin is also very effective, just like hydroxychloroquine. In fact, now I think ivermectin is regarded as most effective of both of those, and 91% effective rate. And so they, but again, these doctors have now been censored. I won't go through all the details there, but the thing is, these doctors step out, and they suffer because they step out. Even Dr. McCullough has really been censored in what he's allowed to say. But here is a dramatic example. You see, this is the continent of Africa. You see, the blue is the one where they are allowed to use ivermectin, and the orange are the ones, and orange and yellow are the ones where they are not allowed to use ivermectin. Dramatic difference in the death rate. You know, the yellow line you'll see here, you know, very high death rate. And the blue, for the countries in the middle there, ivermectin, death rate is very low. And here in India, also very dramatic. And I've got three places in India. There's a province or a state called Uttar Pradesh. That's the one on top. You probably can't see it from your seat there. But they did not use ivermectin until about, I think, February or so. In May. So they started to get a high number of cases, and then they started to use ivermectin, so the number of cases came down in almost flat out to August 15 there. So that's the top curve. Uttar Pradesh is a state in India with 240 million people. You know, we're 330 million people. You think if we used ivermectin, we could make a difference here? I mean, why do we let third world countries show us up? You know, we're supposed to have the best doctors and all that. We just can't get it done. And then the next case is the capital of Delhi, which is huge. You know, 30 million people there. Again, they started to use ivermectin in the top of that curve there in May of 2021. They brought it down flat too. You know, deaths. COVID has almost wiped out in those places. And then in this other province, Kerala, I think it's somewhere on 100 million people or so. They They used ivermectin early on a little bit, but then they stopped using it in August. And guess what? You see the bottom curve? There's quite a few deaths. I mean, it's a dramatic difference. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand this. Tokyo, the medical association chairman there has come out and recommended the use of ivermectin to all doctors to treat COVID. That's a very dramatic statement. This was in August, so I'm not sure what the result of that has been yet. And here's Dr. McCullough. He's my hero because he does things the right way according to medical science. And his history, he is the most published doctor in the field that he is in cardiology and also in epidemiology. And he's also the editor of two different medical journals in the world. And so he started using hydroxychloroquine and started getting dramatic. See, he's a doctor. He has patients, but he's also a professor at a university. Very busy guy. And let's just go through it. So I'm taking this from some of his talks. Okay. So the point is, people say, well, hydroxychloroquine hasn't been tested enough. Well, they've now had 289 trials for hydroxychloroquine. And as you know, the FDA does not allow the use of hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. So this has been very, very successful. Ivermectin for COVID. I think there are up to 64 different trials now, and they've also been very successful in early treatment. And you have to realize that this one is approved by WHO, the World Health Organization, for it is regarded as one of the miracle drugs, if you will. I mean, penicillin is a miracle drug. One of the aspirins is a miracle drug. This is another. It's a miracle drug. And they won't let doctors use it here to treat COVID. And the results of the use has been very dramatic. Okay, I'm going to skip over this one here. So this is now going back to January of 2021. This is from his report. At that point, there were 182 deaths. Remember, we're now at 17,000 deaths, and the average number of deaths per year from all vaccines was about 30 or 40. And so now we're at 182, and we're getting Dr. McCullough's attention. He says, there's something wrong here. We need to do something different because early treatment was not allowed yet. And so here we are now in July, and you can see, again, this sharp curve where we're now over 9,000 deaths from this vaccine, from these three vaccines. And it's time to stop. He's tried to stop this, but he doesn't have the power to do that. So here is July 30 of this year. Again, we got 1,380 miscarriages, heart attacks, myocarditis, which is one of the worst because it's a heart muscle and you can't heal that. And so here in his presentation again, you see that when the deaths occur from the vaccine, most of them are on the day, and then they a lot in the second and third days after getting the shot, and then back to normal after about 40 days, it's back down to normal. So, I mean, that's pretty dramatic. Another way to look at that, analyzing this chart here, this is the death by age group. And of course, most of the deaths are in the high age group over 85, and down below 15 to 19 is zero, 20 to 24 is very, very low, less than 10. And so, again, this is consistent with what we've seen with COVID, as we see that with the vaccines as well. Okay. Here's just a few charts with them back to Israel. COVID, they are very vaccinated, I think over 80% now. COVID deaths before and after. The blue curve up to December is before vaccines were available. And they were an early start, end of December, early January. You can see once they start using it, the number of deaths goes up sharply and then down. And now still it's up at a rate because now they're getting the vaccinated who are getting reinfected and dying from it as well. And you see the same in the UK. You know, you got this spot in the January where they start vaccinating, and that's when their number of deaths increased. And now it's come back better than the UK. So here a little bit more on that was his first presentation. Here's another presentation. I forgot the URL for his presentation for those of you that might want to look at it. But these are his high points. The virus does not spread asymptomatically. In other words, if you don't feel sick, you're probably not carrying the virus, and you're not going to infect somebody else. That's the asymptomatic. We should never even test the asymptomatic. You know, we didn't before this vaccine, before this pandemic. We didn't test the healthy. Yeah, we test if you got some symptoms of sickness, and then we test them. But here, he agreed, you should never test them. Natural immunity is robust, complete, and durable. And then here's a doctor, and he's not the only doctor saying this. In fact, Dr. Rand Paul, who's also a senator, is very vocal on that point as well. In other words, those of us with natural immunity, you know, we don't need the vaccine. COVID-19 is easily treatable at home. You know, the America's Online Doctors, and there's a bunch of others that you can get hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. If you picked out the sheet on the back table there's some pointers to where you can get that. And he would say the current vaccines are obsolete, unsafe, and unfit for human use. Can you be any more clear? Okay, this is the same kind of chart I showed before. Let's skip that. So here's another dramatic chart. Sweden, which, you know, did not do a lockdown and didn't have a mask mandate or a vaccine mandate or any of that, they bumped along that bottom curve here. But Israel, you know, they're on their booster shot, their dose number three. And guess what? The number of deaths is increasing significantly. And we need to be very careful about that in the U.S. here, too. So here's his further comments on the vaccine. In order to get COVID, you have to be in a room with somebody face-to-face for about 3 hours. Natural immunity as a COVID-recovered person is robust, complete, and durable. It stops COVID where vaccine doesn't. PCR test was never approved for people without symptoms because they are likely to generate false positives. Testing should never be done in asymptomatic individuals. They are not sick. You can only transmit the virus if you're sick. There's no such thing as asymptomatic spread. Further, none of the public measures, masks, lockdowns, are supportable. There's zero benefits from either one of those. Early treatment is key. Focusing on those who actually have COVID, not everybody else. We now have 13,000 at the time of his report, because now we're up almost 17,000 deaths from the vaccines, and we've never had a press briefing on its safety or efficacy. You look on the FDA site or the CDC site, these vaccines are safe and effective. Safe and effective. Not with those numbers, they're not. So the vaccine caused the body to make spike proteins, and because younger people have more vigorous spike protein production, they're especially damaged with neurologic, cardiac, immunologic, and hematologic effects. Therefore, we should not be vaccinating the young. I mean, certainly, there's, I think it's Sweden that has stopped using vaccines for people 30 and below because there's no benefit, they've determined. Further, Peter McCullough says the vaccinated are, it appears, super spreaders carrying large amounts of virus and passing it to the unvaccinated, creating the Delta pandemic. I think, honestly, the vaccine program is a bigger problem than COVID in New Zealand. And that is the, I'm not sure what the numbers are in New Zealand, but I saw a report from Taiwan, who has been very effective in avoiding huge number of COVID deaths, because obviously they had spies with in China, and they knew what was going on in Wuhan lab. So they were prepared for this. But now they are losing more people to the vaccine than they lost from the COVID disease. And that means something. If the vaccine went away, you'd say it would be a national holiday. I can't think of any past drug or injection that is this dangerous. We have an out-of-control snowball of biological catastrophe, and we're doing it to ourselves at the point of a needle. Okay. I'm not saying that. Doctor's saying that. But I believe this doctor. I mean, this is not the only doctor. I mean, I'm highlighting him because he's the most published and most vocal about this. But the other doctors have exactly the same message. Conclusions, the COVID-19 pandemic is a global disaster. Pathophysiology is complex, not amenable to a single drug. And others, like even when you treat with ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, you have to use zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, and possibly some antibiotic. You can't just use ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine by itself. The pre-hospital phase is the time of therapeutic opportunity. In other words, we need to treat them early. Don't wait till they're really sick, because then this doesn't help as much. Hospitalization and late treatment from an inadequate safety net with unacceptably high mortality. Conclusions further. Early ambulatory therapy with a sequenced multi-drug regimen is supported by available sources of evidence and has a positive benefit to risk profile. Reduce the risk of hospitalization and death. More safely temporized to close the crisis with vaccination and natural herd immunity. So COVID-19 genetic vaccines have an unfavorable safety profile and not clinically effective. And of course, what makes this worse is the censorship that goes on. I mean, if we were not censoring, we could have doctors discussing this out in the open and get to the solution, but it's impossible because these doctors are censored. Okay, then we come to vaccine mandates. We have to realize these are experimental vaccines. The current vaccines fall under the EUA. There's no indemnification. Vaccine companies are not responsible for any damage or death. And the one that is supposedly would do that, that's not available for another 3 or 4 years. So this violates the scientific evidence. You know, using these vaccines in this way, it violates science. Vaccines do not prevent, this vaccine do not prevent transmission or another infection. We've seen more than 17,000 deaths and more than 700,000 injuries. It violates these mandates. They violate our First Amendment rights. You know, we have medical freedom. It violates the Nuremberg Code. And I'll show that in a bit. It violates the doctor's Hippocratic Oath. In other words, the doctors are sworn, you know, to do things which help their patients but do not injure your patients. And so it violates the Hippocratic Oath. You could get medical exemption or religious exemption. Some people are allowed to do that, and one of our granddaughters has got medical exemption. But it should be unnecessary. It should be the person's choice whether they want to take the vaccine or not. Okay, here's this Nuremberg Code that I talked about. This came out in 1947. This is the cleanup version. But the basic things that, and I'm not going to read all 10 of these, but the first few, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. This came about because of what the Nazis did during the Second World War. You know, they injected experimental drugs into the Jews, but others as well, just to run experiments. And this was came out as a result of the Second World War. So, we as subjects have not given consent to take the vaccine. If you don't want to take it, you shouldn't, according to the Nuremberg Code. The experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results for the good of society. It should be designed and based on the results of animal experimentation. In other words, animals should be tested first. This hasn't been done with this one even. The experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury, and so on. But the first few are the important ones. I've got a copy of this there, but you can get this from, once we put the slides up, you can get it here too. So what's the impact of mandates? Well, certainly loss of jobs by the unvaccinated and those that don't want to be vaccinated. And there are many examples of that. I've given the example of one of our granddaughters. You know, she didn't want to take it. She was a nurse. She was a practice. She got her nursing degree from Liberty University in Virginia, and she got her job in Indiana, and she had given these jabs before, you know, as a practicing nurse, and she, you know, like other nurses, she has seen what it does to patients. She wasn't going to take it. And so we're going to have a staff shortage of nurses and healthcare workers once all these mandates come out. Crime's going to increase. I mean, the police, there are many police who do not want to get the shots. We're creating two classes of citizens, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. You know, more division in the country, which we don't need. Destruction of small business, like restaurants, you know, and particularly in New York City. I mean, you have to show your vaccine passport to get in there. And it enriches large monopolies like Amazon, Walmart, and Costco, Google, because, you know, during the lockdowns, you know, you couldn't go to the small store. You had to go to the big ones, you know, as if that was safer. And it destroys the economy, and, of course, it's a loss of personal freedom. Dr. Malone, who is the inventor of the mRNA vaccine platform, he says this as well. There's a code of federal regulations for these vaccines. Full and complete disclosure of risks. The risks that the FDA had on that one page I showed, that's never been shown. You know, that's just internal documents. You have to be able to communicate the risk in plain language, informed consent of the patient, fully voluntary without coercion. And that's coming from the inventor of this platform. And here, you think they're trying to keep us healthy? Well, look at this. All of Congress and congressional staff are exempt. They don't need to take the vaccine. 6,000 White House employees exempt. Now, these vaccine companies, I'm not sure that's still true, but they were exempt. CDC, FDA, I don't show NIH on here, but NIH, when Fauci was asked, I think it was by Dr. Rand, you know, how many of your employees are vaccinated? He had to think about it. He said, well, maybe 50%. So they don't have a mandate to be vaccinated. And of course, you know, foreign students are exempt, illegal immigrants are exempt, homeless people. But pregnant women are not exempt. Children, that, you know, at least the older ones, are, it's not exempt. Vaccine energy, injured, natural immunity, they're not exempt. You know, that's a, you know, it's, you know, laws for thee, but not for me attitude, which is appalling. So what are people doing? Well, some people are standing up. Here's a story from a gal whose husband worked for a large automotive group. Last Monday, they were given notice to get vaxxed or else. Several people walked out. Some just said no. And the next day, everything changed. They would lose too many people, so they're holding back. Chicago police, I mean, that's in the news, have a huge fight going on there. The police don't want to get vaccinated. But then here, when you talk about vaccine mandates, actually, there is no vaccine mandated for which there is a law. You know, only the governors or the legislatures, and both in the states and in the federal, can issue laws. All we're seeing is mandates, but they're not laws. You know, there's no legislature that's come up with laws yet on that, and we need to understand that. New York Police Department Union also, they will not be taking that vaccine, thank you. Millions of nurses are resigning or being fired over COVID, and that's a tragedy because those are people that look after us as patients, and if they walk, then, you know, that's a big problem. Michigan healthcare workers, you know, standing up. Another group here standing up against that. I mean, there's protests going on here as well. I don't want my children. Well, now that she's speaking up because it doesn't want her grandchildren to know that I didn't speak up. And another one here. One hospital I know of just had to close because enough nurses did not want to take the vaccine, so they had to just close up. And then this one I had to put in because this is from Holland, where we're from, and I'll translate this as enough is enough. So, and here, I'm sure you've seen Southwest Airlines in the news, you know, where they had a walkout, you know, 2,000 people walked out, and, you know, more than 1,000 flights were canceled or delayed. Well, one of our sons and his family were coming from Ohio back to LAX, and unfortunately it was Southwest Airlines. It was canceled, so they had to reroute. So it is big. But I do believe now that the CEO of Southwest Airlines has relented and is not going to require any more vaccines for their people. And here's Dr. Perry Corey again, who introduced ivermectin. I never knew this. Between 100 and 200 members of Congress and their families and staffers have been treated with ivermectin and their protocol for COVID. No hospitalizations. Not one of them reported that to the people. Then we took ivermectin, but we're not going to tell you. So it saved themselves, but stayed silence. So, but here's some recent encouraging things I've seen. Denmark ends all COVID restrictions. They're wide open, no vaccine passports, no vaccine mandates. Sweden, Denmark, Finland halted vaccination for those younger than 30 because of the heart inflammation problem. Germany suspended licenses for a while. I'm not sure the state is now. Japan health minister advocates ivermectin. Anyway, a lot of things are changing. Croatia, Romania, they have stopped vaccine injections. Norway, Singapore have lifted COVID restrictions. And so some good things are happening, but a lot more needs to happen yet. And then this is another thing that's very important to declarations by doctors and scientists. You know, these are people that are treating customers, and there are scientists who know about diseases and how to handle them. They've come up with two declarations. One is the Great Barrington Declaration, which expressed great concerns about the damaging physical mental health impacts of the whole COVID policy. It recommends an approach of focused protection. In other words, you know, protect the sick. Don't quarantine the healthy. You know, it makes a lot more common sense. They had 860,000 signatories so far of health workers and concerned citizens over the last year. This one came out recently, Rome Declaration, in September of last year, and that's actually headed by Dr. Robert Merlone, who's the inventor of the mRNA vaccine platform technology. So it alerts citizens about the deadly consequences of COVID policy. It says, we physicians, we need to be loyal to the Hippocratic Oath, and we, the physicians, should be allowed to practice the art and science of medicine without retribution or censorship. And other people like Dr. Salenko should be allowed to give hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin to his patients. Okay, now I get into a little bit of the what I call the dark side. And I'm not saying that it's not that dark today, but we remember in the 1930s with the rise of Hitler and, you know, how he rallied, you know, people to really tote the line. And this is a note from Pastor Martin Niemöller, who remembers that. He said, first they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists. I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then I came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Very dramatic statement. And I had this on my slide for a number of weeks already, but then for those of you that read the Daily Bread, in there, it has that quoted in there, so I thought I had to put this here too. And this relates to me because I was born in the Netherlands in the middle of that war, and in the house where I was born, my parents actually hid a Jewish lady in the attic for 2 years at the end of the war, and she was saved, but many of her family did not make it. So don't tell me the Holocaust didn't happen. It really did happen. And so I remember that. And when I was a child, well, when I was a teenager, when we came to Canada, I started to think, why did Hitler do that? And then I read his book, Mein Kampf. And he said, this is the way it should be. This is what I'm going to do. Right? And so that's what he did. And so it helped me to understand what happened back there. But then we have to be cognizant of what's happening in our world, too. I'm sure you've all heard of Bill Gates, founder of Microsoft, which for me, since my career was in the high-tech industry, and so but I was in the Unix camp, so we competed against Bill Gates and Microsoft and Windows, and so I know his doing quite well. But then when he retired and became a full-time philanthropist, he's got lots of money to throw around. Where's he throwing it around to? Well, look at those numbers. CDC, down here in the middle to the left, 155 million, 3.4 billion to the World Health Organization. Who are the people that decide whether we get vaccines or not? Those are the organizations that make those final decisions. Where's the money coming from? You know, like they say, follow the money to understand. And there's a whole bunch of stuff here, you know, that we won't go into there. And then I won't go into this, but he's provided money for vaccines in countries like in Africa and India, and things have not gone very well for them there. A lot of people died from the vaccines there. A lot of women became infertile from the vaccines. And so I won't belabor that, but that's in the slide here. So wrapping up here, Peter McCullough, winning the war against therapeutic nihilism. The therapeutic is the early treatment and trusted treatments versus untested novel therapies like vaccines. COVID-19 pandemic to him is a global disaster. The treatment is complex. Pre-hospital phase is the time of therapeutic opportunity. Hospitalization and late treatment from an inadequate safety net with unacceptably high mortality. That's not what we want. But early therapy is of what reduces the death and the injuries. COVID-19 genetic vaccines have an unfavorable safety profile, are not sufficiently effective, thus they cannot be generally supported in clinical practice at this time. Censorship and reprisal are working to crush freedom of speech, scientific discourse, and medical progress. Like I said up front, many of these doctors that I follow, I can't read them on YouTube or Facebook, Twitter, because they're all censored. So, and that's why I follow the doctors, not the bureaucrats. And here's a little bit more of the dark side. Bill Gates and his organization on the left here, he's invested in all of these drug companies, and he funds, you know, some of the organizations that make decisions, CDC and WHO. And then on the other hand, you have this guy, Klaus Schwab, who has an organization called the World Economic Forum. And that's where Fauci and NIH fit in, and FDA. So there's a book that just came out by this Dr. Peter Bregan, and here's what he says, and it's very negative on all this. Don't get scared, get angry, but don't get demoralized. They want that. You know, there's a whole school of public health that talks about how to intimidate and engender fear to get people to do what you want. It's called fear appeal. So it's systematic. Public health people have always been totalitarian in nature. And that's not the only book. You know, there are, I've got 10 here. There are recent books on this whole COVID alliance, some written by the doctors that I mentioned, one in the bottom left, Dr. Sukart Bhakta. He's a retired professor in Germany, and he speaks out about this coronavirus vaccine very strongly. So anyway, I won't go into all that. Another person I follow is Steve Kirsch, who happens to come from the high-tech industry, but he has funded an early treatment company. And he sees the problems with these vaccines, and here's his false narratives that we should be aware of. He says they tell you that the shots are safe and effective. That's not true. No one has died from the COVID shot. That's not true. You've seen that. You cannot use VAERS to determine causality. Well, we've used it over 30 years, and in fact, the VAERS database undercounts. The number of deaths and injuries. So the number really is higher because all of them are not reported to the database. The SARS-CoV spike protein is harmless. Well, it's not. Only a few adverse events are associated with the shots and they're all mild. Not true. So these are false narratives. Other ones, but the solutions, vaccines are the only way to end the pandemic. I remember Bill Gates in a TED talk made the statement, the only way to stop this pandemic is to vaccinate the world, vaccinate everybody. But we know that doesn't work. Vaccine mandates are therefore needed. Masks work, better wear them. Early treatments do not work. hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin haven't been approved, that you shouldn't use them. I'm sure you may have seen some stories saying ivermectin is a horse dewormer. Why would you use it to treat COVID victims? But untrue. So what do we know? PCR tests don't work. Too many false positives. Cloth masks don't work. Asymptomatic transmission is rare. Natural immunity is better than vaccine immunity. COVID-19 vaccines are still experimental. There's been no animal testing, no long-term testing, and the clinical trial periods are still not over. The number of vaccine deaths and injuries is unacceptable. VAERS numbers are known to be either 1 to 10% of the actual numbers. And I've seen numbers, higher than 100,000. I showed you 17,000 deaths. I've seen numbers from others. When they look at the internals of it, it's over 100,000 deaths from the vaccines. Lockdowns, well, therapeutics are safe and effective. Lockdowns kill the economy. I'm going to skip these next two slides in the interest of time. These are just overlooked facts about the COVID. You can read them when if you get the slides. So some concluding thoughts. Follow the science. And who has the science? The doctors and the scientists. They have the science. They know what's going on. And stop the censorship. And others, when these doctors and scientists speak out, let them speak and show where they're wrong. That's how science works. Stop the lockdowns. The lockdowns work. Don't work. You've seen from Sweden, they didn't do lockdowns. There's other countries that are cutting down lockdowns. They don't work. Masks don't work. No mask mandates. No vaccine mandates. No vaccine passports. We need to recognize natural immunity because we really are immune. Let doctors practice their medicine. Permit use of therapeutics for early treatment. Stop medical tyranny and unconstitutional mandates. Support medical freedom. And as we're given by the First Amendment, honor the doctor's Hippocratic Oath and honor the Nuremberg Code. And that's my what I think we should be doing. And I would, you can check that out by looking at what these doctors have to say. And I would say this is a good summary of what the doctors would recommend. So I want to just conclude with this. So how should we as believers respond? What do we do with all this information? And, go back to some of the verses I showed you up front. We need to discern what the truth is. Matthew 24:24, for false Christ and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. Choose freedom. John 8:32, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Know what you stand for. And I use the giants of the faith in Hebrew 11. They knew what they stood for. And we need to know what we stand for. I think you know where I stand, what my opinions are. And so I need to stand for that. John 15:14, you are my friends if you do what I command you. Expect persecution. Matthew 5:10, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteous sake, for theirs is the freedom of heaven. John 15:20, remember the word I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will also keep yours. Love one another. And I'm thinking of, we are creating two divisions here, the vaxxed versus the unvaxxed. And if you're vaxxed, you're still my friend. If you're unvaxxed, you're still my friend. I'm not going to judge, and I hope you won't be judgmental as well. We do things that we have to do. John, let me see here. Love one another. And if a house is divided against itself, that house will not be able to stand. John 13, 34, 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And then we are not to live in fear. Matthew 10, 28. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. And further, Psalm 118:6, the Lord is on my side, I will not fear. What can a man do to me? And we're always to remember, you know, who is in control. God is sovereign, and he is in control. 1 Timothy 6:15, he was the blessed and only sovereign, the King of kings and Lord of lords. And then, and also one of my favorite verses, Romans 8:28, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. And then we also need to remember, in all that we do, we need to share our good news. You know, John 3:16, which you well know, and John 14:6, Jesus said to them, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. So we have many things to be worried about, but we shouldn't live in fear, and we shouldn't forget the purpose we are here, to be able to share the good word with others. So thank you for your time. And I think if we have time for a few questions now. Okay. I'll take questions later then.
All right. I'll just add two verses because, you know, sometimes you look at all this and it can be very scary in our workplaces, in our world. And I know Pastor Kerry shared this one verse recently, Psalms 139:16. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Job 14:5, man's days are determined. You have decreed the number of his months and have set limits he cannot exceed. We will not die one nanosecond before our Maker has determined it for us, whether you got the vaccination or you didn't get the vaccination. And I just want to really thank Dr. Heinz. You know, I think if I'm not mistaken, you put this together all on your own.
Yep.
Yes, just an amazing job. And so thank you so much. Give him a big hand. So I'll end with this, and then I'll close in prayer, and Dr. Heinz can be available for some questions afterwards. Again, back to what we said in the beginning. Each Christian must follow the dictates of his own conscience, or their own conscience, in matters not specifically commanded or prohibited in Scripture. Let's go ahead and pray. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much that we know that you are in control of all things. COVID did not take you by surprise. You knew this was coming. You knew how the world would try to make things so confusing for us. And yet, what we're told to do in Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, to not lean on our own understandings, but to acknowledge you and that you would direct our steps. Thank you so much for this information tonight, Lord, and I just pray that it was a helpful for everyone, and thank you so much for Dr. Heinz and all his very hard work that he put into this presentation. And it's in your precious name that we pray. Amen. So Dr. Heinz will be available afterwards for a few questions. I'm sure he does also want to get home, but thank you so much for all your work in this, Dr. Heinz. Yeah.